4-H animals and exhibits with live demonstrations daily. Visit the Children's Petting Zoo. See the beekeepers, the magicians, and the lumberjack shows. Don't miss the log growers, chainsaw artists, exciting motor show action, and great music entertainment. August 17th through the 26th, Route 3A, Marshfield. For information, visit marshfieldfair.org.
At Rom Diamonds, you'll find just the right certified loose diamond, the right size, shape, and price.
And the diamond engagement ring that truly fits her style and personality.
With hundreds of rings by the world's top.
This is Jasper and Merle.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, Peter, speaking of Josh McDaniels, here's a name to keep an eye on. Now, there may be nothing to this whatsoever, but I've detected just a weird sense coming out of Denver as it relates to Demaryius Thomas. He's a guy that was drafted by McDaniels. He's a guy who ultimately could be available, $8.5 million. We've seen John Elway do this, where he'll squeeze a guy very, very late, maybe try to trade him, and if that all else fails, out he goes like T.J. Ward last year. But with the young receivers there, Cortland Sutton, for example, if these guys can develop, and Elway looks at it and says, $8.5 million, that's too much to pay. It would not shock me if a guy like Thomas ends up joining that depth chart late in the game, but still in time to make an impact for the Patriots.
Nothing will shock me with John Elway at all, because I think he always does what Bill Belichick does. He'll do what he thinks is best for the team, even if it's a revolutionary thought.
Mike Florio with Peter King. Pro Football Talk. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. That's kind of a juicy rumor. But the Broncos, John Elway and the Denver Broncos, trade wide receiver Demaryius Thomas to the New England Patriots. Would there be mutual interest there? Demaryius Thomas, you in or you out on that player, Chris?
I think given what they have, I'm in. He gives them a body type they don't have now that Britt's gone. He has some size. He doesn't always use it, but he can go up and elevate over somebody. He's not a physical receiver like a Brandon Marshall type of guy, or even Keenan Allen is smaller, but he's very physical type receiver. Des Bryant is a physical receiver. That's not Demaryius Thomas's game.
Yeah, that's being kind, Chris.
But it is, I know. But still, I think a lot of Patriots fans have probably been put in a situation where they're biased about this guy because the Patriots have done such a good job defending him. I'm not sure. I mean, you look at his production and what he's done in his career.
Hasn't had double-digit touchdowns since 2014.
He also hasn't had a quarterback since 2014.
So yesterday, I said I was a hard no on Felger and Maz because I think that this player is soft like puppy poo. And he was inherently soft anyway. And then after Super Bowl 48, when Cam Chancellor knocked him into next year, he's really been even more soft. So I was out. But after watching last night's preseason game, especially at the bottom of the depth chart of the wide receiver position, boy, it really feels extra thin. So I don't know. You know, I don't like what the money is. It's like $8 million. So pricey, soft. But, man, they really don't have a lot there at that position. So, I don't know. I could probably be talked into it, but I wouldn't love it. So you mentioned Des Bryant. And as it turns out, Pro Football Talk late last night, Mike Florio reporting that the Cleveland Browns offered Des Bryant a base deal worth less than $5 million. He prefers at this point to wait and watch. The word has been he wants to be on a 1-year prove it type of deal. He turned down a deal worth $7 million with the Baltimore Ravens reportedly. I would take Des Bryant. I know the production's been down the last 2 or 3 years, but like you said, at least he's a physical, tough receiver. He's good in the red zone. I know there could be potential issues maybe outside of the football field, but the guy does try and he gives you his best on a game day. And Demaryius Thomas, I don't know. I don't think that he does as much as Des Bryant. So of the two, I'd take him. But at this point, I don't know. It does feel desperate. So I think I could be talked into just about anything.
Yeah, it feels that way from you, Jim. I think you're selling Demaryius Thomas a little bit short. Like I said, you're right. I mean, there are times that he will sort of shrink from the moment, and he's not the most physical guy. But you're talking about a guy that had a stretch of five straight 1,000-yard seasons. And then last year he had 949 yards with Trevor Siemian throwing to him. So he's a talented guy. And we've seen the Patriots be able to maximize players who haven't been successful in other places in the NFL, or at least haven't been number one or number two type receivers. If you hand them a guy with number one type receiver talent, they'll be able to help disguise some of his weaknesses and I think maximize his strengths. So I think it's not just about what you've seen from Demaryius Thomas as a Bronco. You have to project him to here and say, how would Belichick and McDaniels enhance his game and get the most out of him. And I think from a raw talent standpoint, with Edelman out, those first four games, he would be by far the most talented wide receiver on the roster. The problem is, at this point in the year, you bring him on. I'm not a big believer, and I think we've seen it with Decker and this, like, well, Josh McDaniels drafted this guy, and you know, he spent, you know, three quarters of a season playing for Josh in that system, so he'll come right in and figure it out. I don't think so. I mean, that was a long time ago. It was 8 years ago. So I think anybody you bring in at this point, you're asking a lot for them to get up to speed. And maybe one way they can compensate for that is by being extraordinarily talented. I know that Demaryius Thomas has that talent, so I'd roll the dice on that. All that being said, if I had to choose, like, who I could have of Broncos wide receivers, I'll take Emmanuel Sanders.
I know that guy's a stud, and I always thought, yeah, you know, and the Patriots did at one point, they were in on him, but they didn't, yep, you know, there wasn't a big enough offer. But boy, that's a guy that I think would be a perfect pad. Another guy that was rumored to be on the trading block earlier this week, and then I got snuffed out, is Randall Cobb in Green Bay. That's another guy that does a lot of those Edelman type of things.
Yeah.
I know he's had some injury issues, but that's a guy that I think would be a perfect fit here. Again, though, looking at last night's game and just that position as a whole, it just feels so thin and so desperate, especially in that first month without Edelman. I could be talked into just about anything. Bryant, that's kind of been poo-pooed by, you know, the likes of Mike Reese, even Troy Brown on NBC Sports Boston, saying that he wouldn't.
I think Mike Giardi had something, you know, asked about probably not.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a fit here, but I don't know. Is it? Do you think that's a personality thing? Do you think he's kind of washed up? Where are you on Des Bryant?
You know, initially I was a hard no, and I've come around sort of as I see the wide receiving core, and I look at it and say, okay, you know, you had Kenny Britt here, you brought in Michael Floyd, you brought in these guys where it seems like you want a bigger physical receiver, you just want that type. And if you sort of limit what his role is, if you understand that he's not someone who's going to be able to run the full route tree, which they seem to have no problem with Cordarrelle Patterson, then, you know, why not? If it's low money, you can take a flyer on him. Because here's the thing. Dez might be a pain in the butt, but I've always thought that if you're the Patriots, isn't this supposed to be your advantage, that you have such a strong culture that you can absorb a guy like this and put him on the straight and narrow? So if other teams have this concern about him coming and souring the locker room and being a diva and being disruptive, if you're the Patriots, your culture that we talk so much about should be able to absorb that and really reform him. And we've seen them, it's worked before with guys. So if this is what the roster is and you want that type of physical receiver, which they don't have, well, you can take a flyer on Dez Bryant. I'm not mad at you for doing that.
So we looked at, on Felger and Maz the other day, we looked at the history, and not just here, of, you know, mid-season or early-season trades where wide receivers ended up somewhere else. And it doesn't feel like that position, it's easy to integrate someone new. And Mike is convinced that no matter what they were to do at this point, even if they brought in Bryant at the... He hasn't worked with Brady. He doesn't know the system. He just feels like it's too late. No matter what they do, he feels like it's too late. Now, where there were a few instances we did find. Braylon Edwards traded in 2009 for the Browns to the Jets. Actually ended up making a pretty quick impact there. Brandon Lloyd going from Denver to St. Louis, but there was a common denominator there in that Josh McDaniels had been fired from as head coach, where he had Lloyd in Denver and became the OC to the St. Louis Rams, and he was productive there. But other than that, it's real thin. I mean, even just last year, Kelvin Benjamin, who granted was a great big fatso at the time, goes from Carolina to Buffalo, only ends up scoring one touchdown. So, I don't know, just overall, do you think it's too late, no matter what they do?
It's pretty late. I mean, it'd have to be the right guy. That's why I say a guy like Sanders, because I think he's a guy that has played in a number of spots over the years. Obviously, he hasn't played in the Patriots system. It would still be a challenge, but he strikes me as sort of a pro's pro. He's a little bit of a technician and tactician, and so that's what you need in terms of somebody who's going to be able to get up to speed. You know, I think he would at least have a shot. Some of these other guys, I think it could be a little bit tougher. I think Thomas is a pretty smart guy. He seems to process football pretty well. But whoever you're bringing in at this point, you're asking a lot of them to try and get up to speed at this point.
All right. Well, Brady got his binky back this week. I know Chris is excited about this. I'm happy about this. Alex Guerrero traveling with the team to Charlotte. So does this mean Tom Brady has won? We will discuss after the Sports Hub headlines with Mike Sarge-Riley here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Tom Brady's trainer, Alex Guerrero, banned from the team plane a year ago. Well, is back on the team plane. Let's see, in the last year, Tom Brady said, Jimmy Garoppolo, I want him out of town. They trade him. Tom Brady said, OTAs, that's for everybody else. I'm going to skip them. Alex Guerrero, we're going to set a precedent. I get my guy in the plane. Win, win, win. Folks, this is sports in 2018. Tom Brady should get all of those. Tom Brady has earned the right to special treatment. Bill Belichick's figured it out because Bill Belichick's really smart. Bill Belichick let him skip OTAs, didn't make a big deal out of it. Bill Belichick let him put Alex Guerrero right back on the plane and has not made a big deal out of it because Bill Belichick's smart.
Preach, Colin. Preach! It's Colin Cowherd of FS1, his take on the return of Alex Guerrero. I feel like he has full access, but he was on the plane. Patriots went down to Charlotte and ended up losing in the third preseason game last night, 25-14. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. But it does feel like Brady kind of won a little bit, Chris. What was your take on this? It was kind of a surprise. It was on Thursday. We heard, wow, that was actually Felger first heard from a source, an inside source, someone on the plane. Guess who's on the plane? Alex Guerrero. Initially, I was like, who, Des Bryant? Like, who's going down there? Because I had resigned myself into thinking, Chris, this was never going to be resolved. Guerrero was never going to have access again. So he travels with the team, doesn't have the sideline access. But you also read from Karen Garesian of the Boston Herald this week, well, Brady a little bit more upbeat this week all of a sudden. Gee, I wonder why. Because his guy is back. Because his comfort is paramount to his and this team's success. I thought it was great news.
Yeah, I think it's great news, too, because I think that it is sort of an understanding here that maybe we can put some of this, I don't want to say a turmoil, but maybe some of the disagreement, the disconnect between Brady and Belichick behind us. And I always thought this would be the way it would go, Jim, in terms of the closer we got to the season and meaningful games, that they would come to some sort of agreement. And doesn't this smack of a compromise? Okay, Tom, we're not going to make you pay to fly this guy to the games where he performs the service for you, which ultimately helps us because you're by far our best player. We'll let him be on the team plane. And then some of the other things, as far as we know, he has not been able to get his access back in certain cases. So it seems like a compromise. It always made sense. It was easy for these guys, as I said repeatedly on Felger and Mass, to dig in during the offseason because there was nothing at stake. There was nothing at stake for the team. It was more important sort of for their personal agendas and ambitions to stay in their corners and dig in. But now when it's at a point where it's go time, it gets to a point where these are games that matter. You strike the obvious compromise. And to me, Jim, I think it goes back to the contract that Brady signed as well. Belichick needed a win. He got the win on the contract. Brady gets the win on Guerrero being on the plane.
So to me, it's the contract. It makes the contract make sense because a couple of weeks back when we got the news of that and this incentivized contract, which, you know, it seemed like something you would push in front of a knucklehead like Jameis Winston, a guy that you can't trust to, you know, to stay on the field or not get in trouble. Like, hit these incentives because we don't think you'll be able to do it. Like, to do that to a guy who just won the MVP, granted, I get it, 41 years old, it just didn't make sense to me. It felt like something else had to be a caveat here. And it feels to me that this Guerrero thing is that little hidden incentive, the caveat to that contract as to why Brady actually accepted the damn thing. Do you think, though? So I'm reading from Dan Shaughnessy's Twitter, Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe, your coworker. He tweeted, I keep hearing that Guerrero being around is a Belichick compromise. Doubt it. Looks to me like Kraft meddling again to please Tom. Do you think it's that? Because I just don't think that the owner would make another move like that, because it felt to me like, you know, I'll always believe that there was some sort of forcing of Bill Belichick's hand to trade Jimmy Garoppolo to appease Tom. In this case, I don't know. To me, it just makes the contract make sense. I think Bill had some hand in this. To me, what proves that Bill had some hand in this is that Guerrero doesn't have sideline access. Like, yeah, he can travel with you, but he can't be on the sideline. Like, if he wants to buy a ticket or be up in a box, he can do that.
Yeah, I think, look, I understand where Dan's coming from, but Jeff Howe, who's, you know, pretty plugged in with the Belichick side of things, said last night on the pregame show that it was a concession from Belichick. And I do think it's a concession from Belichick. And it just makes sense. I mean, he's a smart guy. It's an easy one. It's an easy concession to make, you know? It's one of those ones where, think about this, if you're Bill, right? You took stuff away that already existed and had existed for years. The guy being on the sideline for road games. The guy traveling on the team plane. The guy being able to treat other players inside of the Patriots facility. The guy being able to give Brady his rub down in the massage suites that are outside the locker room. You take all that stuff away. You don't have to give Brady any contract extension. You just give him a bunch of incentives, and then you give him back something that already existed? Sounds like pretty brilliant negotiating to me. What did he really give up?
Right. Yeah.
He didn't give up anything.
Is it really that?
He didn't give up anything. But so it was an easy concession to make, and Tom feels good about it. And now you feel like you brokered the peace.
Yeah, I just think ultimately too, it shows me that the three of them, Kraft, Brady, Belichick, finally sat down and I think hashed this thing out. I think it's the contract. It's Guerrero being back around, and maybe it was, you know, Robert Kraft finally just saying, like, can we just figure this out, please?
Yeah.
You babies. Like, come on. Like, in the best interest of for all of us collectively, the team, like, let's just hash this out. And then you see the photo yesterday before the game with Bill Belichick in his, you know, Cab Calloway-looking coat.
Nice reference, Cab Calloway.
The only thing missing was an old-school fedora with the quill in it. Him, his son Steven, and Brady all having themselves a laugh, you know, which kind of felt a little bit staged just to show.
Yeah, big chuckle about the field conditions.
See? We're all having ourselves a good old time.
It's all about the field
here.
Conditions.
But I thought that was important, and it does feel like there has been a thaw, at the very least, between all parties, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I think it was easier for these guys to dig in their positions during the offseason. There was not really a lot to be lost at that point from a team standpoint, from what their ultimate goals are. And Brady said this, you know, his goals and Belichick's goals are aligned. They both want to win. So you come up with a compromise, and that's the situation here. And I always thought, and I could be wrong, but this is my opinion. I always thought that the restoration of at least some of the privileges for Guerrero, that was more important to Brady.
I agree completely.
Than the contract.
Yeah, I agree.
That meant more to him. That showed appreciation and respect and all that stuff he talked about or didn't talk about in the offseason more than the contract.
Do you think that there's any chance that with Josh McDaniels back in the fold last minute, it was like, he's going to be the coach in Indy. No, we got to get him back. I feel like this is potentially Bill's last year. Do you think that there is any part of the reason that he gave in and let Guerrero back and have access again is that Bill is just like, if this is my last year anyway. Like, who really even cares? Is it that big of a deal?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, Bill's sort of an inscrutable sword. I mean, I'm not sure we're going to see his retirement coming. I mean, if they won the Super Bowl this year and he retired, would I be stunned? No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he came back either. I mean, we always mention the Marv Levy thing, but then he talks about how much he loves doing this. So Bill's now, what, 66 years of age? You know, I always thought just gut feeling that he would coach, you know, through age 68 and then walk away. So, and that would line up with Brady's current contract. So maybe it's this year and next year, and then at that point he makes a decision to walk away. I don't know. You know, I think, does anybody really know what Bill Belichick is thinking? Maybe
no.
Maybe Mike Lombardi? I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, it's always sort of difficult to gauge. So I wouldn't put that. I think this is more about, like he says, he always does what's in the best interest of the team, right? And in this case, even if he might find it disagreeable, he's going to let Guerrero back on the plane because it's in the best interest of the team, because it makes his franchise quarterback happy, and because at the end of the day, I mean, remember, this is a guy who went to, you know, Wesleyan and was an economics major. He didn't give up anything. He just restored something that already existed. It's actually master negotiating. It looks like he's this benevolent leader who's giving Brady this big thing, this big concession. But the reality was it existed before, and he just took it away, and now he's giving it back.
He took the bread and gave Brady his crumbs. 617-779-0985, the number if you want to join the show, talk about last night's preseason game, Guerrero getting his access back, which Chris and I, as two card-carrying Brady Bobos, feel like is important. Something, you know, I mentioned this yesterday on Felger and Maz, so while I had resigned myself to thinking that Guerrero wouldn't be back, and I was happy that he is, I've also resigned myself into thinking, Chris, that the pain and aggravation that I felt from the outcome of Super Bowl 52, the loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, it's actually going to get worse this season. Now, I know, again, much like last night's preseason game, there's only so much you can take from a preseason game and blah, blah, blah. This Eagles team, I don't know how much you've been paying attention.
I have.
Oh, they got Super Bowl hangover written all over them. And I know, again, you take what you say with a grain of salt, but Nick Foles, he's turned back into Nick Foles. He's, I don't know if it's an injury thing, but the whole team, kind of like the Patriots, dealing with a lot of injury issues. It just feels like to me, in watching this team and the Pats kind of beating up on them and this Browns 5-0 loss where the starters are playing extensive minutes the other night on Thursday night, man, It just feels like kind of like those Giants teams, like lightning in a bottle. I can't believe you lost to this team, especially the Philadelphia Eagles, one of the great loser franchises in sports. I've just already set myself up for it. Like, there's going to be an injury-riddled season for them. I don't expect Wentz to be back and looking like the Carson Wentz pre-knee injury. Foles has turned back into Nick Foles. It's just, I'm already mad about it. And I think if you're not already mad about it, a Patriots fan, you're not paying attention. This Eagles team's got like 8-8, 7-9 written all over them.
So I agree with you the way they've looked. The thing is, I think Wentz is going to come back, and I think we're forgetting how good Wentz was before. He was the MVP of the league before he got hurt. And so if he comes back, I think that lifts them up. Also, I think there are a lot of question marks in the rest of that division. That could be a year where someone wins that division at 9-7.
That I agree with. Like, okay, the Giants have made some improvements, obviously offensive line. They bring in Saquon Barkley, who's been dealing with this hamstring thing, but okay. You know, in theory, they should be a little bit better as long as they stay healthy. I don't know, Dallas?
Their wide receiver situation is just as bad, if not worse, than the Patriots.
Yeah. So it's not, to make you feel better, look at their wide receiving core, look at the Seattle Seahawks wide receiving core, look at the Washington Redskins wide receiver core. Like, there's, a handful of teams that it's just like, who are these people? Huh? So it's not just the Pats. But, yeah, you might be right there. So, like, 9-7 could end up in the division.
But I think you're right. You're dead on about Foles, though. What's the thing you said? You said he made a bargain?
He made a deal with the devil for 2 weeks last year to be lights out against the Minnesota Vikings. Then, of course, in Super Bowl 52. But, boy, oh, God, has he turned into a pumpkin, and it's so aggravating to watch. A couple of brutal picks the other night. He's just...
Took a safety?
Yeah, took a safety. He's Nick Foles again. Oh, God, that guy. I'll be mad about that forever. And like I said, it's just going to make me more mad this year as those losses pile up. Do you think it might also have kind of affect the Pats, too? And, look how deep they've gone here. Super Bowl two out of the last 3 years. Injuries already kind of piling up a bit with this team. Like, do you think that they could kind of get a Super Bowl hangover thing as well? Maybe 2005.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it adds up, right? Playing all that extra time, and Belichick's acknowledged it, I think, during the preseason. I did say off the air to you that this season sort of is starting to have a 2005, 2013 sort of feel to it, where you just know it's going to be more difficult than it normally is. It's going to feel like it's a grind to get to where they ultimately want to be and where they usually are. And yeah, it just sort of feels that way. I don't know how much of that is the Super Bowl hangover or how taxing all these playoff runs have been. They're going to try and go to 3 straight Super Bowls, which that hasn't been done since the Bills in the 90s. So there's a lot of that, too. But I also just feel like it's the roster. I think this could be a grind of a year.
Was that the worst of the Belichick seasons?
05?
Yeah.
You tell me, because you're the better Patriot historian than I. You remember all this stuff because you take all of it so personally.
Oh, it's true. No, there's three that immediately come to mind. 02, 05, and 09. 09, will always be the worst. I know Brady coming back from the ACL and everything, but my expectations were so high. But you could just tell pretty quickly, especially after the 4th-and-2 in Indy.
Yep.
Oh, God, this season. Ugh. Went down to New Orleans for that Monday night
game. Oh, got their doors. Devery Henderson's still running free. Somewhere.
Yeah, so this is maybe where my Brian Hoyer thing really stems from, too, because they put Hoyer in at the end of that game because it was such a blowout, and I was yelling to absolutely no one, Chris, I didn't fly all this way to come see Brian Hoyer.
Of course you were.
But 05, was frustrating. 02, yeah. I didn't hold against them because I never expected to watch this team win a Super Bowl in my life. But that 05 team, I remember it was pretty evident pretty quickly. I remember they got shellacked here by that juggernaut Chargers team, like 41-7.
Yeah, and Schottenheimer had comments afterwards, and Brady went after Schottenheimer. Keep mind your own team pretty much.
Yeah. And it just, but that more than anything else was the cumulative effect of too much football. And I just wonder, looking at this team, okay, they should fall out of bed because of the AFC East, which looks like they're now going to be starting two rookie quarterbacks with the Jets and the Bills. They should fall out of bed and be at worst 11-5, even if they're beat up. But it just feels like it might be one of these years where it's been just too much football for this team over the last handful of seasons,
Could be. It feels like, the 05 season, the two things I always remember about that year, Patrick passes fumble when he pulled his hamstring. He just, dropped the ball. And the other one...
They got murdered by the Colts.
Oh, remember? Yeah. Yep. And the other one is Eugene Wilson going on, live TV and basically telling Dwayne Starks he needed to get his S together. Which was tremendous. Just ripped his teammate to Burton, on the air. It was fantastic. Yeah, that team had some issues.
Yeah, all in all, 09, too. The other thing that...
Monty Beisel, by the way.
Oh, God, that's a name I had forgot.
Monty Beisel, remember him?
Yes,
I do. By the way, I got ripped for this, too. Shane McClellan, folks, people, Patriots fans. Yeah, I was right. Monty Beisel 2.0. I was correct.
All right, so you want to weigh in on anything we've discussed so far? This preseason loss last night, Guerrero getting his access back, 617-779-0985. You know, at this time last week, Chris, I was incensed about the helmet rule. Now, I've dialed it back a bit because of a missive that was sent out by the league this week. When I first read it, mad, even more mad, but now there was a little thing in there, a little tidbit that I had picked up on that some others have as well, that I feel a little bit better about this helmet rule, which we didn't see called all that much in some of the games last night. So we'll touch on that. Coming up next here, Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Fake to Jones, back to pass, Sudfeld throws over the middle, complete, has Goddard over the midstripe into Patriots territory, and a flag down on the play. Jordan Richards finally got to him. We'll see the call, but this might be one of those low hits here with a helmet.
Personal foul, defense number 37, lowering the head to initiate contact, 15-yard penalty, automatic first down.
And that's on Jordan Richards, who made the stop.
So stupid. I don't know what to say about this. Dumb. This is dumb. Oh, are you kidding me? Good Lord, that's awful. I mean, what in... Yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, this is silly. It's not even like you're watching a football game. It's like we're watching a rules clinic here where, you know, science is just put on pause. That doesn't make any sense. We get to watch them march down the field. The fans are busy with the wave. I mean, we're not... That's not football. You know, I don't know what it is I'm watching here. That's silly. The NFL needs to stop this. You don't need to crap on your own product.
All right, so that's from last week, where that was the fourth of the new lowering the helmet contact penalties was called, the one that was just looked like a legit tackle made by Jordan Richards. And Matt Chatham rightfully lost his mind. And I, like other football fans, lovers of violence, also lost their minds because I felt like this rule is going to ruin football, and my God, it's going to end up watering down the game and all that stuff. So then it felt like the league was being extremely stubborn this week when they ended up sending out a press release saying the new helmet rule hasn't changed, and it kind of has, but we've heard your complaints, but we're not really changing anything. There was a statement released by NFL Executive VP of Officiating Troy Vincent. There was one word, though, after reading this thing, immediately when I saw the headline, I was like, oh, I'm even more angry. They're not going to do anything about it. They're not going to change this. Ah. There is a word that stands out, though, and this was pointed out brilliantly by Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Inadvertent. In this statement, inadvertent or incidental contact with the helmet and or face mask is not a foul, Vincent said in the statement. Inadvertent. Not resulting from, achieved through deliberate planning, as in not intended. Hugely critical adjustment to the rule, especially since the prior version of the rule presumed intent based on the lowering of the head. And looking at some of the games last night, none of these called in the Patriots' loss to the Carolina Panthers. And in 7 preseason games, overall, 4 helmet penalties called. It does feel like they've dialed this back. They've talked to the referees and said, look, this inadvertent, if it's inadvertent, if it looks like a tackle, call it as a tackle. Will there still be mistakes made? Sure. But in just 1 week, it does feel like they have dialed this back. And I'm feeling far more optimistic about it than I was at this time last week, Chris.
Well, what they've done is they've specified the rule, which they never did in the beginning. I mean, this should have been done. This rule never should have been implemented without this language that they now currently have. And the ad hoc fashion that they've done this is ridiculous because it's not fair to the players or the coaches. And I've said from the beginning, Jim, I felt like this rule was something where the owners got the presentation from the chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, and it said about concussions, and a lot of the concussions had to do with, you know, helmet leading tackle attempts and all that stuff. So they said, we have to do something. I thought from the jump, this was a PR policy, a PR reaction more than it was a pragmatic rule that had been implemented. And you saw that. So this language is significant. It changes it. And I think it gives the officials an out now to not have to call it every time some guy goes into that posture.
Yeah.
Because if they're going into that posture, like Jordan Richards was, to try and wrap a guy around the knees or the upper thigh area, And it happens, now they don't have to say, okay, well, this guy put his head down. And I think, you know, Matt Chatham, to me, has had the best point about this of anybody. And I think Ryan Clark of ESPN echoed it this week. The physics of this make it impossible to do what they want these guys to do in a lot of situations. Like, if you're going to lower your shoulder and wrap somebody that's a moving target, a lot of times, yes, your head is going to at least momentarily, temporarily, go down, go towards the ground. You're going to look down and try and lower your shoulder and get in that position to get the leverage. And I feel like they never acknowledge that. And you know what the alternative is? The alternative is, do you remember that game last night? Early in that game, James Bradbury of the Panthers tried to tackle somebody and turned his whole body and turned his whole head and had no idea what he... It was one of the worst tackle attempts I've ever seen, but it was completely legal and he whiffed. And that's what you're forcing guys into, is basically making a tackle attempt like that where your head's turned, your body's turned, you know, you're basically hoping this guy stumbles over your ribs and your back and falls down.
617-779-0985. You want to weigh in on this and anything football related that we've discussed in the first hour and a half of the show. Longest order of wait. Let's go to Joe in New Hampshire, who has a thought on what looks like the penciled in one starter for the Jets. Hey, Joe, you want to talk about Sam Darnold? Go.
Yes. Well, question regarding Sam Darnold. Number one, you and I had a conversation after the draft and you doubted the pick. Wanted to get your updated opinion on him now. I know it's only preseason, but what your thoughts are. And as a non-Patriot fan, it's kind of interesting to see when you guys talk about wide receivers contributing to the Patriots, you make it sound like everybody else's offensive plan or complexity or route tree to be put on the back of a Cracker Jacks box and that nobody else runs any sophisticated offense. When in fact, you look at guys like Danny Amendola when he was with the Rams, basically had better stats, if not the same stats as he did with the Patriots. And he had Tom Brady throwing the ball to him. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that, too, and I'll hang up and listen to you.
All right, Joe. Thanks, guys. On Sam Darnold, right now, at least through the preseason, I have egg on my face so far. We'll see if it translates. Obviously, rookies are going to make mistakes. His interceptions will likely be in the double digits. But even just looking at some of the highlights from last night where the guy's engineering long drives, picking up third down after third down, he looks pretty good.
He does look pretty good. There's hope in New York. And the second,
if nothing else, he's penciled himself in as the week one star.
Oh, he's
like,
the
there's no
yeah,
doubt
that,
about
that's,
it.
That's where they want to go with it. And Teddy Bridgewater's look pretty good, too.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like it's a trade is imminent there based on everything that you read. But with Sam Darnold, and you know, to their credit, they have a pretty good wide receiver core, too.
Like, I like it, too.
Robbie Anderson, not bad. I love Quincy Enunwa. Tough, injury-riddled season for him last year. But, you know, he's got stuff to work with there.
And Curse is good.
Yeah. Running backs, you know, they're blech. But, I don't know, overall, Darnold looks like they might have hit on that pick. But it's still the Jets, and I still find, I don't know, I figure they're gonna, there'll be some way they screw it up somehow.
Yeah, and just the back half of his thing, I would say, I have just seen, you know, the job of a coach is to put players in a position to succeed. And so I've seen that, you know, he's a Jets fan. So how did the Jets use Danny Woodhead? How did the Patriots use Danny Woodhead? That's the difference.
Let's go to Grant in Beverly on Brady and Belichick. Go ahead, Grant.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to throw my thoughts out there on Belichick. I've always been a proponent of getting rid of the coach a year early instead of getting rid of Brady a year early. I mean, I look at last night's game, and I just really can't take this. Bend and break and bend and then bend a little more. I mean, look at the here's the stats from the championship game to the Super Bowl. This is Bortles and Foles, 51-79, 666 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, I really don't get it. This Brady, bashing and Bill Belichick, I'm still waiting for the genius to show up. This guy's blown 3 Super Bowl leads. He blew a 28-3 championship lead at Indianapolis. He handed over a Miami game, running the ball up the middle 15 times. I just can't. I really can't take the guy. I mean, his defense bends and don't break. Reward Chung with a $2 million contract. Don't pay him in dollars. Stick Brady with the worst set of receivers I've ever seen in my life. He's 41. This is your reward for taking $86 million left over a 17-year career. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Grant. Look, to me, Belichick has his, I don't know, reputation. Has he taken a bit of a hit here over the last season and a half or going back? You know, if you look at some of the moves going into last season, yeah. I mean, that's some people, and this is, and we've taken like a handful of calls here really since the Super Bowl of people ready to run him out of town a bit much. Like, you're far too drastic, I think, many of you, and I can understand why you're upset about that game and looking at this defense and even, you know, Carolina carving them up to the tune of a 10-minute drive to start the game last night, and you're frustrated because the defense hasn't looked all that good. Still, come on. Like,
I know.
Everybody calm down.
But, you know, that guy is the inverse of and the sort of antidote to the Belichick can do no wrong people. And that's probably why that guy exists, because he's so frustrated of hearing that no matter
he's
what.
Genius,
yeah, no matter what he does, it was the master plan all along and it was the right move. And so you get the flip side of that, which is that, which I think is going, you know, going too far, obviously, in terms of, you know, Bill's he's the greatest coach I've ever seen. So, you know.
All right. Well, continue to take your calls on the Patriots and anything football related if you want to weigh in. 617-779-0985. I do want to move on to the Red Sox, though. David Price, who's arguably been the best pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break, dominant performance the other day against the Cleveland Indians. Want to get your thoughts on that, Chris, right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Mike Sarge Riley. It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Join me, Justin Thomas, as I defend my title. Tickets are on sale at DellTechnologiesChampionship.com.
Download the new 98.5 The Sports Hub app today.
Highly underrated piece of meat.
Listen live.
I don't buy this for a second.
Podcasts, tweets, and more.
Love it.
Available in the App Store and Google Play.
It's the joy of the hot dog.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Trying to end the eighth. And he does it with a flair. He struck him out. Well, if that is the end, that was another sensational performance by the left-hander.
Yeah, and he made a reaction after that. He kind of yelled after he punched him out like that. I think that's enough, especially the way that he reacted. I mean, he's almost telling you he's done.
To not have that really bad game mixed in, you know, at some point, that was, that's good. You know, this is the pitcher Boston signed. So for me to get back to that, you know, it's about time.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So, Red Sox got their asses kicked in Tampa last night by the Rays, 10-3, but that's beside the point. The big story is David Price. So, I ask you, Chris, since the All-Star break, arguably the best pitcher in baseball. So, for you, Gasper, is it all aboard the Price train? Do you believe that this is going to translate to the postseason? It's that simple.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, do I believe it will translate to the postseason? No, but that doesn't mean I think he's going to be terrible in the postseason. You know, I just don't think he's going to pitch to a 1.09 ERA in the postseason. I think he'll be able to go out there in a start and give you a chance to win, and that's really all you want. I mean, look, last year in the postseason, pitching out of the bullpen, which I understand is different, he was your best pitcher. I think with Price, we sort of vacillate between these high highs and these low lows. It's been unfair to him, I think, and it's not an accurate portrayal of his ability. When the guy's not doing well, it's like, this guy's the worst signing in Red Sox history. He's terrible. And then when he's going well, it's like all of a sudden, you know, he's going to go out there and dominate, you know, like a Curt Schilling in the postseason. When the reality is, it's probably going to be somewhere in between. And the one thing I will say, and I've said it to you consistently and other people here, is that rooting against David Price does you no good, because you need him to pitch well for this team to ultimately get to where it wants to go. And for a team that has basically a 3-year championship window in which they are in year two of, you can't afford for him to falter and for him not to be someone who at least gives you a chance to win in those postseason starts.
Yeah, with this team's offense, they can win games 10-9. 8-7, something like that. I will continue to root against Price, but the Red Sox to win those games. Oh, that's not going to change.
You guys made you money, Jim.
That's true. Yeah, with the stupid impersonation. Take that. It's like Felger asked me yesterday, what did Price say after that, you know, the dominant performance against Cleveland the other day? 7-0 win, goes 8 strong, 3 hits against our legitimate team, the Cleveland Indians. What did he say to the fans? Are you not entertained? He was like Maximus and Gladiator. Are you not entertained? What do you think about what he said after the performance, though, Chris, that this is the pitcher that Boston paid for, the $217 million?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, again, since the All-Star break, 109 earned run average, 5 runs over 41 and a third innings over 6 starts. Red Sox have won 16 of the last 18 starts he's made. Yes, the numbers look great. He looks filthy. But doesn't he still have to perform in the postseason for him to say something like that?
I think he's feeling pretty good about himself, and that's the way that I read into that. You know, he's feeling good about himself, and he feels like this is the way that he should pitch, and he knows the expectations here are high, and he's meeting them, and I think that was his way of sort of, you know, saying that. You know, I almost feel like that was a little bit like, this is the guy you wanted, isn't it? Isn't this the guy you wanted? I'm the guy you wanted now here. I mean, the reality is that salary is like an albatross for him, because unless he goes out and pitches like Chris Sale, people are going to say, you know, he was never worth it.
So we'll get to him coming up, but just your thoughts on that series overall, because it started pretty ugly. Cleveland looks like, you know, a continued bad matchup for them, and they're down 2-0 early in game 3, and it's Brian Johnson against Carrasco. On paper, it looked like, oh, God, and it looked okay. So game 4 felt like a lot of pressure was going to be on Price, but I thought that was a hell of a bounce back for them.
It was.
And it showed just what's inherent with this team all season long. That, you know, big juicy plums. There's an it factor. There's some sack with this team that wasn't there, I think, in prior seasons. But still, ultimately, that can maybe only take you so far. I thought the Bruins had an it factor last postseason, but ultimately they ended up against a team that was better.
It was a better team.
The Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
So there's still some teams here that can potentially knock them off, and the Indians being one of them, because they have a far better bullpen than the Red Sox do.
You know what? Here's my thought. Kudos to the Red Sox there. You know, they're in a situation. They're facing a four-game losing streak. The pitching matchup is not in their favor. They fall down early, and they battle back. I do think there's a battle factor with this team, which I really like. But my big takeaway is that when I think about it, I don't think that the separation between the Red Sox and the other American League contenders, whether it's the Yankees, the Indians, the Astros, even the A's, I don't think it's as big as it would indicate from the standings. I think these teams are a lot closer. In other words, you know, the Red Sox are 50 games over 500. You think they are clearly superior to some of these other teams? I don't think they are. And that's not a knock on the Red Sox. I'm just saying I think they're going to have their work cut out for them in the postseason. Because if you're the Yankees or the Indians or the Athletics or the Astros and you've played these series with the Red Sox this far, you know they're a darn good team and they're going to be a tough out. But do you also feel like this team that's clearly better than us and that we can't beat? I think all those teams feel like they could beat the Red Sox in a playoff series.
It's almost as you're saying, Chris, that this Red Sox team, all their wins, or many of them, have been weighted somehow. It's almost as if the record deserves something. What would that annotation be? An asterisk. Yeah. I've since removed it. But yes, I'm with you. It feels like they're a lot closer to some of these teams, like Cleveland, like Oakland.
Yeah. I'm not saying
New York dealing with a ton of injuries.
Yeah, I'm not saying, there's no asterisk needed for the wins. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that, I'm intrigued to see the month of September, because you have six games against the Yankees and you have three games against Houston and a road trip to Cleveland. And I think the gap is not as wide. I think the Red Sox are the best team in the American League.
Sure.
And I feel that way in the playoffs. They're the best team. They should go to the World Series. But the gap is not as wide as you would think. And I think if you're Cleveland after that series, yeah, it's a 2-2 split and you could have done more. But do you walk out of that series first time you face the Red Sox this year and think, that's a team we can't beat?
No, and it's just, you know, what I found embarrassing, too, the first couple of games that they dropped to Cleveland, too, and, you know, filling in on the baseball reporters and sitting there with Maz, too, and it was mostly from older listeners, but older Red Sox fans, but boy, like, immediately, people called up, it's got to be 1978 all over,
panic.
You know, like, 2011, like, instant panic, like, oh, I thought you people believed in this team. Why were you jumping down my throat for putting the asterisk on their record earlier in the summer? Like, you didn't believe in them? Like, I kind of found that embarrassing. Like, come on, stop it. Cleveland's
a good team, too.
No, for real, Chris.
Whoa. Mister, you are one of the most fatalistic sports fans I've ever met, and now you're saying it's embarrassing that people, that Red Sox fans, would be thinking the worst?
That they're going to
always think the worst.
I know that, and I'm a bad fan that way. You've seen me. Hell, last night watching an ultimately meaningless preseason game, and I'm yelling at the television like an a-hole. I bite my hand during
delicious.
Playoff games.
I enjoyed every second of it.
But for people to think that they're going to lose the division as beat up as the Yankees are? No. Don't get this confused what I think is going to happen in the playoffs. I don't think they're winning the World Series. No, they'll still get tripped up somehow because the bullpen blows. But them losing the division, people talking about that and being worried about that, I think they're out of their minds.
Yeah, but these are people who are scarred by like their prior like 40 years of fandom or 50 years of fandom. I mean,
they've won the World Series.
It doesn't matter.
Since then.
It doesn't go away. Maybe it goes away for, you know, young folks. People who are younger than us, I almost call us young and we're not. But, you know, it's young folks and middle-aged.
Us young olds.
Yes, exactly. Maybe it goes away for us. But and I heard that, you know, I think the collective age of those callers or the average age, I should say, of those callers, you know, was probably about 68. You know, for those people, it doesn't go away. The hurt doesn't go away. And you're just, you know, you remember what it was like. A Red Sox fan, your entire existence was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. That's what it was.
I just think at this point, since they've won World Series, plural, you'd be over being broken by Bucky Dent. But be that as it may, Price has looked great. Even I have to eat my words on him, so it is kind of all aboard the Price train. Let's get to Chris Sale, though, because after we wrapped up last Saturday, he's put back in the DL. Want to get your thoughts on that. You want to talk Sox as well. 617-779-0985, our long commercial-free segment next here on Gasper Murray 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.